The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's October 24th, 2019. Yay.
It's October 23rd.
It's the 23rd. You're right. It is. Look at that. It is the 23rd. Oops, I wrote it down wrong.
What would you do without me?
I don't know. Some days I wonder. Anyway, welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Aw, yeah.
Who you just heard from. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show and you're listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can also send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Okay, Ron's rant of the week. Educating consumers. Okay, this is a piece that came out of Bicycle Retailer magazine, and it was actually there was a piece here that was written by James Stanfill, who's the president of the Professional Bicycle Mechanics Association and the founder of A Better Bike Biz. So he has some questions here that go out to bicycle shops. And let's say question number one, you are a bicycle shop. You're investing. How are you and where are you investing your marketing dollars? Are you buying into some brand marketing for your mainline bicycle brand? Are you spending more money on social media or local advertising or supporting local cycling events that aren't races? That's one question he has. The second question is, if you are a bicycle brand, what are you doing to drive customers into the stores that you're supporting that are supporting your brand? Thinking about ads talking about your latest product are great, but what are you doing to educate your customers on how important the local bicycle shop is? This is a big shout out. And if you are, number three here is, if you're a bicycle industry nonprofit, what have you done lately to bolster the idea that a bicycle shop is the most important part of a cyclist's existence? Have you helped drive customers into the shops that are supporting your organization? And I'm going to ask a second part on that. Are you a bicycle shop that supports local advocacy organizations? Very, very important. If you are not, then maybe you need to take a look at the bigger picture of how you exist in the actual cycling world. So the point here is basically we need to educate consumers and let them know that the bicycle shop is the place that you should be friendly with. If you're not friendly with your bike shop, if you've been doing it all on your own, or you've got that great friend down the street who just knows everything about bicycles, and the folks at the bicycle shop roll their eyes whenever they see a bike worked on
by
that
person.
You mean
like you?
Or like me. It could be like me. But, you know, I do know from one of the local bicycle shops that I hang out in that they have particular people that are out there that are working on other friends and other people's bikes. And when they see a bicycle come in and they find out that that particular friend was working on it, they roll their eyes. Because, you know, not everybody's a bicycle mechanic. Now, you know, some of us have been doing it our whole lives. Some of us were in the industry for a long time. So therefore, we have some education on it. But when it comes down to particular things like maybe some of the newer things that are out there, let's throw disc brakes and shocks in there because they do require a level of expertise.
How do you like those disc brakes?
I hate them.
Oh.
So anyway, I think I've made that opinion pretty strong in the past, but I'm just not a big fan of them. I like the big disc, you know, the rim.
They sing nice.
They make funny noises. They're hard to keep adjusted, and they wear out the brake pads quickly. I've said it. That's it. I'm not going to say any more. We're not talking about that right now. That's a different rant for a different day, and I have ranted about it before. And I'm sure that once the local bicycle shop gets a hold of it and plays around with it, they can dial them in closer. But they do tend to go out of whack on kind of a regular basis.
Kind of like my knee.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the point here and where I'm trying to go with this is that what are we going to do to help educate consumers that Amazon is not their bike shop or wherever else it is that they're purchasing things. You know, there's a level of expertise that goes along with a bicycle shop that is really, really, really different than trying to buy things that are online. It's going to be a battle forever. It is a service-oriented industry, and if you do not serve that service-oriented industry, they will not be there anymore. So shouting out to the bike shops here, I think that there needs to be even more of an education process by the bicycle shops. Hey, bicycle shops, have you gone to your local community center and done a talk recently about bicycle mechanics and education and things that you can get from the bike shop? I'm not telling you you're going there to sell people anything. I'm telling you you need to educate people that a bicycle shop is definitely a friendly place to visit. And make sure that the last part of that, that your bike shop is a friendly place to visit and not an intimidating place to visit. I hear it all. In my outside looking in, I can tell you I hear it all. And one of the things I hear more often than not is, I would go to that shop, but they're very unfriendly there and they make me feel stupid when I walk through the door. So if you are one of those shops that's doing that, I'm going to rant on you. Shouldn't do that. So let's... If you want to discuss that further, you can discuss it on my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk. Tell me and let us know how you feel about this. On a positive side, so this is kind of cool. I thought that this would be something kind of nifty to talk about. And I just lost my page. The 48 universities, okay, have been given the bicycle friendly university certification. Okay, that's kind of cool. So now there are 208 colleges and universities that hold the bicycle friendly university status certified by the League of American Bicyclists. I know that there is some discussion with our local university here right now, and we're not there yet, but it's something that we would like to see. We at the, meaning the members of Bike Mansfield right here in Mansfield, Connecticut, would like to see UConn get designated as a bicycle-friendly university. They have a long, a long row to hoe. So it's going to be a while until they get there because they definitely have some problems on the campus, signage problems, acceptance problems of bicycles on their road, and also probably one of the biggies here too is they have a lack of bicycle racks on campus. The bike racks that are here, which are outside of every building, are full. They're all full, and they're overflowing with bicycles, and people are dumping their bicycles on top of other people's bicycles. It doesn't look good at all. What does that mean? That means that this is a heavy usage bicycle university. And when you take a look at it and you look at it from the standpoint of the amount of area that it consumes, why wouldn't you want to ride a bike back and forth between classes? It's way quicker than walking and certainly would get you to where you need to go. But there's no place to put your bike, so that's another problem. So anyway, so the bicycle friendly university program, it has a number of criteria which you need to meet in order to be bicycle friendly, and the campuses are incubators for the next generation. They build safer streets. If we want to build safer streets and encourage healthier communities and to empower more people to bike, colleges and universities can cultivate a wide culture, making biking a preferred option for people to get around campus. So it sets the stage for the future. And if you take a look at, I'm gonna reach out to the millennial age group. They have really taken on moving into cities and using mass transportation and riding bicycles. So that is an example of where this could go and where it is going if we are going to continue to grow cycling and infrastructure usage in the future. So anyway, there is a list of these at bicycleleague.org /university. If you go there online, you'll see applications there, and you will also find all the 208 current bike-friendly universities. So among the 48 awardees, this round features West Virginia State, the first bicycle-friendly university in the state, and the 700-student Minnesota State Community and Technical College. So those are just a few. But there's quite a bit going on there, and I thought I would mention it out as an on the positive side that we have bicycle-friendly universities, and it's growing. So that's really good to see. Next thing on my list here is we talked the Maintenance Minute. The Maintenance Minute I'm going to talk a little bit about as the season winds down for many. It's about to begin for others, dressing for the cold weather. This is from a road bike enthusiast. So, yeah, okay, it's getting colder out. It's definitely getting darker quicker, and it's definitely darker in the morning. But there are things you can do. There are lights for the bikes, there are which we have had episodes on in the past, and possibly I will bring that up next week as we're approaching that daylight savings time and other various things. We still have some... certainly some good cycling time to get out there on your bicycle. But as the season winds down, we are looking at different things. This is from this particular piece comes from a road bike enthusiast, and it's basically addressing different levels of dress that you wear for different times of the year. And the other thing is, of course, when you're going off-road on your mountain bike, which does, mountain biking definitely picks up this time of year, cyclocross picks up this time of year, because you tend to not go as fast, so therefore you tend to not get as cold, and you also generate a little bit more heat because there's a lot of power work that's involved with both of those activities. But going to this, what to wear in various weather, this is kind of a cool thing, and it comes from a website, actually, which is roadbikerider.com, and what to wear in various weather. So obviously, if you're looking at 70 degrees or above, you're looking for shorts and a short sleeve jersey. That's kind of the norm. I tend to dress a little heavier, but everyone has their way. I would also, at 70 degrees, would still be wearing a base layer. Might even possibly have very light arm warmers and knee warmers on. But everyone has their way of doing it, and it all depends. Now, let's say you drop down 10 degrees and you get into like 60 degrees or 15 degrees Celsius. You're looking at shorts and a long sleeve jersey or a long sleeve and thin undershirt. Once again, I'd wear a long sleeve base layer, and I would also wear a long sleeve jersey, and I would certainly have something over my knees at that point. And knee warmers are my favorite item that I keep. I think I have three different levels and layers of knee warmers that I use because they're just so easy. And as the weather warms up, if you're out on a ride and it starts warming up, you can peel them off and you can stuff them in your back pocket. And I find them to be very, very useful device, as well as arm warmers too.
I bought don't hit me. I put arm warmers in high vis colors.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yes. Yeah. So even if I'm not wearing a super high vis jersey, my arm warmers are. So I have arm warmers in don't hit me yellow, don't hit me orange, and don't hit me pink.
Yeah, that's a great idea,
yeah,
because you're very visible too. And as we get to this time of year, the sun is at a different angle.
Yeah.
So there's more shadowing.
Yes.
And it's harder to see people. So you having a little higher visibility, that's a really smart thing to do.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Especially, you know, you're in the and you're in the woods. If you're on the rail trail.
Right.
You want to be visible on the rail trail. You want everyone to see you on the rail trail. You want you want other cyclists, you want people walking, you want people with kids, and you want hunters to see you on the rail trail.
And oftentimes the rail trails are restricted to that hunting thing, but it's not necessarily enforced.
Well, there could be a hunting area that abuts the rail trail.
It could be off of the rail trail.
Yeah.
It's all true. It certainly could be. But it is, and you are, you know, going through the woods at a fairly high rate of speed versus something else. So you could very easily startle someone who is hunting nearby.
Yeah.
And they might turn and consider you a, by the way, folks, don't wear white when you're in the woods this time of year. please.
Oh.
No white. No white.
White because no white. White could be a, because could be a deer?
It's the back end of a deer.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And it is what they're looking for. They're looking for flashes of white. So if they see, if a hunter sees a flash of white, they're going to immediately train their weapon on that flash of white. So don't wear white this time of year.
That's why, you know, people joke at us, you're wearing obnoxious colors. Oh, my God, you're wearing neon pink.
And my answer is thank you.
You saw me, right?
Right.
Right.
Right. So now we're dropping down to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, 10 degrees Celsius, tights or leg warmers, heavy long sleeve jersey with sleeveless or short sleeve wicking undershirt or lightweight long sleeve jersey.
You drew,
with
do
long
realize.
Sleeve undershirt. Now, I'm really like, this guy must have a lot more body fat on him than I do, because I will be in a jacket at this point. I will totally be in a jacket.
And that's what I was going to say to you. You do realize that this all depends on the person, that people
it
have
does.
varying tolerances for heat. Like I overdressed the other day. I went on a ride yesterday, and the ride started out in the high 40s, and it finished in the 60s, and I was dressed more for the 40s and 50s, and I had three layers on top, and it was too much.
Oh, I get
it. Yeah, and what I probably should have done is worn a heavier jersey and worn a vest. So, I mean, there's just so many combinations, and I'm always trying to decide. Like today, I could wear a thin long sleeve jersey, or I could wear a short sleeve jersey and arm warmers. Today,
sure.
I'm going for the short sleeve jersey and because the arm warmers tend to be warmer than your long sleeve jersey.
Some are.
Depending on what you're wearing. That's right.
Depends
because
on what
you can have a
you can have
a fleece jersey. I have fleece jerseys too.
And I have like three different levels of arm warmers too, depending
on
the day.
So, for sure.
You know, it depends on what the situation is. And you figure it out after a while. But the key point is, if you overdress and you've carried enough lightweight equipment to dispose of easily, you can just crumple it up and put it in your back pocket.
That's
my
right.
favorite item is the lightweight jacket that crumples up almost to the size of your fist and will fit in your back pocket very easily.
Yeah.
I love those things.
Yeah.
I think that's as important as a spare tube on your bicycle as far as I'm concerned, because it's you can take it off, you can put it on, you can be out for a ride for a while, the weather could change a little, you throw that jacket on, all of a sudden you're protected, you feel a lot better. I really like that. So
I think vests are nice, because vests will protect you when it's cold, and they don't bother you too much if it warms up.
Right.
And they keep the wind
out of you.
Because
there's a little bit more ventilation with the vest, so you've got that going on too. But they do keep your core warm, so
that's
very, very nice.
And then the other thing is, you can get jackets where the sleeves zip off.
You can. You can get a lot of things. There's a lot of great technical clothing out
there. Or that you can get jackets where you can just vent the pits.
Right. Well, a lot of times the rain jackets especially are made that way.
Yeah.
The ones that are made to keep the moisture off of you, they will have pits that zip all the way about almost down to the elbow and then all the way down to the side. And that'll help you ventilate out too, which really helps a lot. So, So we drop down to 45 degrees, 7 degrees Celsius. Tights or leg warmers, long sleeve wicking undershirt, lined cycling jacket, full fingered gloves. Mine would be thicker. Headband covering the ears, wool socks, and shoe covers. Those are all things you're probably looking at if you're down into the 40s.
I'm going to lightly be covering my ears in the 50s.
Yeah.
In the high 50s, especially if it's going to go up into the 60s, I don't necessarily have my ears covered. But if it's going to stay in the 50s, I'm going to be in full finger gloves. And my ears are going to be covered. If it's high 50s, it might be a light cover. But, you know, the closer it gets to the 40s, the warmer my ear covering is going to be.
Again, you know, it all depends on the person
as far as
that goes.
Yeah.
But I tend to overdress rather than underdress. I can always take clothes off and I can't put them on. If I'm 20 miles into a ride and I realize that I'm too cold, I'm kind of in a bad spot.
Yeah.
So that's why I always over-prepare rather than under-prepare.
Yeah.
And then we go down to 40 degrees, which is my limit. I stop right there. That's it. No more. No more under 40 degrees. Even between 40 and 45, I've got a breaking point, because my feet and my hands, although I do have the hand situation taken care of now, but my feet will not do well with that.
Because don't you have free nodes?
I'm good for about an hour at that point, or I have to be off road. If I'm off road, it's a totally different story. So if I'm on a rumbly off road dirt roads, or if I'm on cyclocross area, that's nothing. Anyway, if I'm on a an area where if I'm, you know, riding around in fields like down at Mansfield Hollow or whatever, I can tolerate the cold a lot better because I'm working so much harder because you have to put a lot more power into the bike and therefore you are going to work better, harder. So at 40 degrees or 4 degrees Celsius, 4.4 degrees Celsius, tights, leg warmers, long sleeve mock turtleneck, and lined cycling jacket, medium weight gloves, headband covering ears, winter cycling shoes, shoe covers, and wool socks. And if you've never had a pair of winter cycling shoes, they certainly do make a difference, but they're still not the answer on the feet. The feet are a problem. I have a friend who bought electric insoles for his shoes. They are actually, they run off of a 9-volt battery, and he said, it's the only answer out there. But, you know, you can actually go to that level. But we're talking 40 degrees now, and there are people that will commute in much, much colder weather, and at which time you have to make some decisions about, you know, how much cycling wear you're going to wear and how much other wear you're going to put on, how long your commute is, et cetera. You drop down into the 30s, and you're talking heavyweight tights. I'm talking wind front, you know, something that's really going to keep you warm, especially because when you get down to that point, you're also going to be, well, first of all, you're going to run into wind chill going down hills, but you're probably going to have some wind because it's getting colder and it's winter and you're going to have steady, cool winds blowing at you. And then we're talking shoe covers and wool socks and the possibility of actually using those little charcoal toe warmers at this point, too. And then if you're crazy enough to go down to 30 degrees, which I know many people are, or negative 1 Celsius, heavyweight tights, long sleeve, heavy wicking turtleneck, undershirt, heavy cycling jacket, heavy winter gloves, lined skull cap. I like those skull caps, actually. Those are quite nice, and I'll use them even in warmer weather. Winter cycling shoes, shoe covers, wool socks, charcoal toe warmers. You know, this is a point at 30 degrees where if I had to get somewhere and it was like in a commuting situation, I would dress for it and deal with it. But if I'm doing this for fitness, I'm indoors. That's all there is to it. And then 25 degrees, ouch. Winter bibs. I mean, there's all sorts of things.
If it begins with a 2, I'm inside.
Plastic bags over your shoes, including your winter shoe covers. Oh, my God. It's just, like, ridiculous.
That's really
and 20
okay.
degrees? Really? Really? And you know what? Again, if you're commuting, say you have a, you know, 3 to 5 mile commute, I would put a pair of, I wouldn't be using cycling shoes anymore. I'd use a nice set of flat pedals. And I would
and wear boots.
I would put my boots on.
Yeah.
And that's what I would do because it doesn't matter. I'm just using it to commute. It's not that big a deal, and that's what I would do. And I would wear, you know, I have a variety of outdoor winter clothing because of for the years of doing various things. So
if I'm going to do a short training ride and it's high 30s, I'll go out and do it. If it's like just short hills or
but
short sprints.
But we're talking like an hour.
Yeah, right. I would go long. And the
Probably
other thing is
maybe an hour and a half max, but at that point, now you have to do the math, and you have to decide how long did it take me to get dressed.
You can do that if you want, but if I want to be outside,
did it take me to get undressed?
Yeah,
and
sure.
How much of a ride did I get out of it?
And did I get outside? Because sometimes I just want to get outside, and I just don't want to be indoors. And getting outside is better than not getting outside.
True.
And you got to remember that most people are not as thin as you, and most people can handle temperatures that are colder than what you can handle, and that's most of us.
Yeah.
So you know, I'm going to be, I'm okay with being outdoors for at least an hour, if I'm doing a training ride. The other thing that will get me outdoors is if there's a good group ride and everybody in the group ride wants to ride, and it's 32 degrees and it's going to get up into the, it's going to stay in the 30s. I'll suit up and I'll go do that ride. I probably would not, if it's in the 30s and just to ride by myself to get miles, I'm probably not going to do it.
Right.
But I might do a training ride if it's high 30s. But if it's a fun group ride and I haven't gotten out in a while and I have an opportunity to do it, I might suit up and do it. Because I've done it in New Jersey, and that was pretty fun with snow on the ground. Not on the roads, but on the ground. I've gone out in 32 degrees on a Princeton Freewheelers ride and had a good time. You have to wear everything. You have to wear your warm base layer, and your warm jersey and a heavy coat over that, and your fleece tights and your. Did you say anything about wool socks?
I mentioned wool socks a few times. Yeah.
Wool socks, absolutely.
I have them on now. I always have wool socks on my feet. I like wool socks a lot.
Right. They're
thin wool socks, thick wool socks. I love wool socks.
Yeah.
But that's what my feet desire. So therefore,
well, because you have Raynaud's,
right?
And you're very thin, and most of us aren't.
By the time the blood gets down to the feet and the hands,
it's cold. Yes, that's right.
It's radiated.
Yeah. So most people aren't going to be wearing wool socks all the time.
No.
Us commoners.
And of course, the best way to this is kind of an interesting thing too. And I think that motorcyclists do this too. People who ride their motorcycle in cold weather is they put a warmer on their back by their kidneys.
Yeah, right.
And that way, it keeps the blood warm.
Right.
And that's kind of an interesting concept. And I saw a cycling jacket that was extremely expensive put out by a company many years ago, and they had a special little pocket that you could put warmers into to warm your kidneys, which kept your blood warm, therefore kept everything in your body warm. Thought that was kind of an interesting idea. But moving on into the content of the show. It's been a bit here. We've kind of spent a lot of time on that, but that's okay. That's all important information. And definitely, if you want to discuss it, you can discuss it on Bicycle Talk on Facebook. And we'd love to hear what you do for the cold weather. So this is a little out of date because I was off for a couple of weeks due to being out with a situation, we'll call it. But I am back. And so this is all the way back to October 14th, but I think it's something that we really, really need to discuss because the greatest cyclist who has ever lived on this earth, and I will take that on for debate if you want to argue with me about it. I'd love to hear about it. Eddie Merckx, he suffered a head injury in a fall. 75 years old. This guy's 75 years old. He is still out riding his bike. 74. And he was being treated for a head injury at a Belgian hospital near Dendermonde. And according to the media reports, Merckx suffered a serious head injury after falling while on a ride with friends on Sunday. Officials told the press that Merckx is not in critical danger, but would undergo more exams on Monday. I was in contact with his wife, Claudine, last night. Close friend Paul Van Himps told Sporza, according to her, it's all good. Monday, new exams are planned. Considered by many as cycling's greatest racer, Merckx was back in the limelight this summer when the Tour de France started in Brussels in order to pay homage to the 50th anniversary of the first of Merckx's 5 yellow jerseys. So he's okay. I looked to see if there was any follow-up on it at all, and it doesn't appear that anyone has said anything different than just the fact that he was examined for that. But Eddie Merckx took a tumble and hurt his head. So that's never a good thing. We like Eddie. Eddie's okay. He's a good guy. He still is my hero of heroes. Next piece on my list here on the political front. You know, if you've been listening to Bicycle Talk, I've been talking about the tariffs, the Trump tariffs, and the problems that we're dealing with China, and the fact that there've been it hurts the bicycle industry. It certainly hurts a lot of industries. It hurts farmers in the U.S. Try not to get too political about this, but it really, really hurts the bicycle industry. So, according to Bicycle Retailer, which is the trade magazine for the bicycle industry, this was published on October 21st, so this is pretty recent. The officials are saying that Taiwan e-bike exports increased 131% on the eve of an annual factory tour. So e-bikes are kicking butt, as we know. Many, many, many of the e-bikes were coming out of Japan, out of China. And, of course, that was a questionable tariff situation. I believe that those tariffs were held off for a little while, but I think that they hit again on the 15th of October. But 131% increase on e-bike exports out of Taiwan. So that's sort of a big deal, I would say. Total e-bike exports by value were up 119%, $591 million compared to the same time last year. Exports of e-bikes to North America and Europe accounted for 91% of the total export volume. Top three countries that imported Taiwan bikes were the Netherlands at 161,000 units, the U.S. at 92,000 units, and Germany at 34,000 units. By value, the Netherlands again led the way with $218.5 million worth of exported e-bikes, followed by the U.S. at $117.3 million and Germany at $43.6 million. And if you're wondering why that German number is down a little bit, it's because Germany makes a lot of their own e-bikes right there in Germany, and Germany is the home of, I believe, Bosch and Bosch Electronics, and so there's a lot going on there. That's probably why. Overall, the export revenue of Taiwanese bicycles, including pedal bikes and e-bikes and components, increased by overall value by 11% compared to the same last year, reaching $2.6 billion. So why have people gone to Taiwan? Because the tariffs aren't there. And the other thing is, quite honestly, you're going to get a better bike. They tend to build better bicycles there. They're definitely a higher quality manufacturer of bicycles. And that is, of course, can be disputed. But they certainly were in the game a lot longer than China was in the game. So anyway, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to talk about, because I have been talking about the whole tariff thing over the last few months. So on the political front, Taiwan is reaping the benefits of the tariffs. So back to e-bikes. I am, again, going to talk about e-bikes. Why? Because I think e-bikes are probably one of the best things that will happen to the bicycle industry in, like, the last 20 years. Okay. Why? Because they are getting people on bicycles that would not normally go on a bicycle, or someone who may have had a memory of riding their bicycle when they were a kid, and now they're an adult, and now they're not in such good shape, but they want to get back out and give it a try again, and now they have some assistance with the e-bike. So recent research published in the Transportation Research Interdisciplinary Perspectives found that those who ride e-bikes get more exercise minutes per week than those who ride normal bicycles. E-bikers also reported significantly longer trip distances, whether riding an e-bike or a conventional bike. Those who switch from public transportation or car trips using e-bikes for transportation also saw a spike in fitness levels. So, yay e-bikes. Here we go again. And they seem to get a bad rap. And there's a bunch of things here. I'm going to talk about a few things. There's a national park issue that's out there right now. There are a number of states that are working on legislation for e-bikes right now, because there is definitely, there are some points that we need to pay attention to. I know Connecticut is working on an e-bike legislation right now, too. I'm not sure how far along they are on that. If anyone is out there, Susan, if you're listening, please send me over something on that. I'd like to know where that stands right now. I think we discussed it last week, but I can't remember exactly. So anyway, e-bikes are certainly a point of discussion, and they should be a point of discussion, because I think you're going to find that they will save cycling in a way, I will say, because cycling has been taking a hit due to the fact that there are so many truck-like vehicles out there that are consuming our roads and consuming the space that we have on our roads, that people are very intimidated to be out riding bicycles. But if you can get on a bicycle that actually has a little bit of zip to it and can help you get out of the way should you need to get out of the way, not that you should have to, you should be able to share the road, but we won't get into that right now. But this is a way that you can commute back and forth to work. And think about it. If you have an e-bike, you've got some electric assistance. If you need it, you just kind of kick it up into a bigger gear, put a little more pressure on the pedals, the motor kicks in, and it gets you to where you have to go without having to put out a lot of strain and effort. And therefore, you won't get to work smelling like you just rode your bike to work. But anyway, The beauty of this is that we are seeing more people getting on, more adults getting on bicycles is what it really comes down to. These are not just motorized bicycles. These are electric assist bicycles. So they still will allow you to pedal your bike, and that's a really, really good thing. The cliche of e-bikers being old or lazy may not be right. In fact, it's just come down to the purpose of the ride. A considerable part of the people that are using an e-bike may do it because they need to make trips, which are too long or too hilly for a conventional bike. So there you go. I mean, this is, this is definitely something that is a useful piece of equipment. And, we all will end up on an e-bike at some point in our life, I do believe, because it does get to a point where maybe you don't have the fitness to get up that big hill that ends up at your driveway at your house or whatever it may be. So it happens. It doesn't, there's comments that are made in this article. Without an e-bike, I didn't ride because I couldn't handle the hills. With an e-bike, I ride. Case closed. I use the assist as little as possible, and I'm getting stronger all the time despite being older. So there's all sorts of reasons why you might want to ride an e-bike. And I think that there's definitely fitness benefits. There was a study done that showed it was a closed group of people who were riding e-bikes and people who were not. And I believe there were, I don't have that one. I think I talked about this probably a month or so ago. But the controlled study group showed that the people that had the e-bikes were actually more fit at the end of a month or a month and a half long study than the people who were riding conventional bikes, because the people who were riding the e-bikes rode them more often. And that's, there it is, consistency. So moving on the e-bike front, 22 states are now following the three-class e-bike system, doubling the total in 6 months. So there in 2019 started with 11 states using the Model 3 Class E bike definitions. So now defining e-bikes within the three classes, effectively doubling the total in the last 6 months. The 11 states at this time, and this is a little bit old, is Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Maine, Maryland, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Texas, and Wyoming. So the e-bike market is definitely going to grow. It definitely needs and requires some definition, because you are dealing with something that is motorized and can go a little faster in some cases than a regular bicycle can. And so there has to be a line drawn as far as whether or not they fall into a motorcycle or moped type category. So you got to be real careful about that. So, there's a lot of discussion going on about this. You're going to see more and more of this to happen. Most importantly, good e-bikes are leading to better bike e-bike access. For example, after Wyoming legislators passed the state's three-class e-bike law in February, Wyoming State Parks decided to allow class one e-mountain bikes anywhere a traditional mountain bike is allowed, even opted to conduct a Class 2 pilot project. Number of local trail access wins from Virginia to Arizona can be attributed to land managers recognizing increase of e-mountain bike use and creating consistency within the three classes of e-bike laws and state laws. So, it's happening, folks, and you're going to see more and more of it. E-bike access in national parks. This is sort of a big deal. This is a very big deal. So we've got on August 29th, the Department of the Interior, David Bernhardt, ordered the Bureau of Land Management, Bureau of Reclamation, Fish and Wildlife Service, and National Park Service to establish interim policies within 30 days that guide the use of e-bikes on public lands. The departments were encouraged to adopt a policy that allows e-bikes to be ridden where traditional bicycles are allowed. So that's kind of an interesting thing. We're starting to allow that to happen. Carriage roads, you know, policy. So these policy announcements are watershed moment for the e-bike riders. The next time you plan a trip to the outdoors with your e-bike, check the many new incredible rides available in your national parks. Number one on the list here, Carriage Roads, Acadia National Park in Maine. What a great place for an e-bike. Oh, my God. There's like 40 miles of trails up there. It's really cool. It's a gorgeous area, by the way, if you've never been up there, either on a conventional bike or an e-bike. The White Rim Road Canyonlands National Park, Going to the Sun Road in Glacier National Park, Stone Cliff Road, New River Gorge National River, and Lake Village Trail in Yellowstone National Park. So there's becoming more and more acceptance to e-bikes even at that level. And I know that was something that was a lot of concern because we don't want the bikes, you know, chewing up the terrain and causing damage in any way. So this is a thing that we're starting to see established even on a national and federal level, which is wonderful. I think it's great. So on top of that, we also have another piece I'd like to talk about is how to grow your bicycle community. You know, I'm always talking about advocacy and what you can do for bicycling in your area. Remember, the more people we put on bicycles, whether it be on the road or off, especially on the road, though, the safer the roads will be. So I know that sounds like you're going in the opposite direction here, but it is true. We don't need more bicycle trails to ride on. We need more people on the roads. And in order to do that, you need to get out and get active. I am probably going to be attending a meeting tomorrow night in Willimantic where they're talking about, I had a presentation that I did for downtown Willimantic about the airline trail, which goes right through town, and the positive benefits that something like that can impact on a community and how much you can get out of that. So you wanna basically look at ways of growing your bike community because it's important. It's something that that you can do. You can do this. This is something that you want to learn from some people that have been doing this. There's a woman by the name of Courtney Williams who moved to New York City from the Midwest in 2009. She realized pretty quickly that she wanted to ride a bike, but she didn't feel safe. Beyond the traffic stress of a large city, she was aware of other intimidations. Yeah, New York City taxi drivers, for starters, come into being a woman of color on the bike, so she started promoting group rides. She discovered that she was good at organizing and good at advocating. The Brown Bike Girl was born. Today, Williams partners, it's true, it says Brown Bike Girl, very cute. Today, Williams partners with local government, nonprofits, and institutions to increase bicycling access and adoption within communities of color and bicycling education for all. Williams helps get more people on bikes through initiative planning and facilitation, training, and creative collaboration. And you start out, one of her points, she actually makes a couple of other points here besides just getting better access, but also eliminate negativity through education. And Williams says that a lot of the negativity towards cyclists comes from the belief that people on bikes don't know how to bike or obey laws correctly. Especially in large cities, people riding bikes for transportation often speak languages other than English. We need to work on bike education, which requires teaching in multiple languages, Williams says. If you're not educating people in a way that they'll be able to receive, you're not making improvements. The second piece of making education accessible is to offer it in places where the people who need it feel safe. Williams suggests offering both bike education and recreational events in places that are traditionally underserved rather than in places that are central to the city. And then last on the list here, equity means people getting people on bikes and keeping them riding. So there's a difference between diversity and equity. Diversity is just a pretty collection of things that are different, but if you're not serving those in a way that improves their quality of life, then you're not helping. Williams offers courses that educate people on situations they'll encounter when riding and or owning a bike in a city. She teaches not only about bike laws and etiquette, but also on how to park and lock your bike. So we also need a lead to get people to be able to express their insecurities about cycling. Cycling makes sense. So, and she has a course that she actually calls Cycling Makes Sense. Many times she talks to people of color and they're worried about how much a bike costs, but I help them see how much money they can actually save and how their lives will improve. Plus, you also have programs like Bicycle and Hartford, which can get you on an inexpensive used bicycle. There's also Bike New Britain in New Britain, which does the same thing. There are avenues out there to get people on bicycles, and boy, it's a whole lot less expensive than driving a motorized vehicle. So anyway, you wanna see changes? Get involved. Grow your bike community and get involved in advocacy. Get involved in learning more about what you can do. That's the important part. The more people we put out on the roads on bicycles, the safer the roads will be. I'll say it over and over and over again, but it is true, and it is what works, and it has been working, and there's many statistics. So backing up again, e-bike. New California law provides funding for e-bike purchases. Yay, California. Here we go. So you know that California has this big push. They're trying to become completely fossil fuel independent by 2040, I believe, is what they're looking at right now. So they have to take a lot of steps there. I know from being in the solar industry that there's a lot of help in California for putting solar on your home, and that they're trying very, very hard just really wean themselves off of fossil fuel, and they're doing a great job of it. On Friday, September 6th, California's Governor Gavin Newsom signed Senate Bill 400 into law. This bill provides funding for low-income and disadvantaged communities to purchase an e-bike or use a bike share program, making e-bikes and bike shares more accessible means of transportation. SB 400 amends the Clean Cars for All Act program by expanding the definition of mobility options to include e-bikes and bike share programs. If a resident lives in a participating air quality district, they can apply to receive a voucher up to $7,500 towards the purchase of an e-bike or bike share program in exchange for their gas-powered vehicle. In exchange for it. So you got to turn your car in, and you can get $7,500 to go out and buy yourself one kicking e-bike. That's for sure. That would buy a really, really sweet e-bike. Probably an extra battery or two, too. So the amount does not vary based on income level, but varies depending on the air quality district. So if you happen to live in an area where there's a lot of pollution in California, you get a bigger bonus to going e-bike versus motorized vehicle. Very, very cool. Good old California. You know, they're just, they are definitely a trendsetter. They are showing us how it can be done, and big, big, big reach out there to California and providing laws that are going to be putting e-bikes out there. So a little bit more about the purpose of this program. Of course, we're trying to reduce fleet emissions by getting newer, cleaner, and more efficient vehicles on the road. Reducing emissions from the existing fleet is a component of the California State Implement Plan for meeting air quality standards and supports its efforts to meet the state's 2030 climate change goals. How you can qualify. You must live in an air quality district that is enrolled by the program. And you can go on to peopleforbikes.org, and you will be able to click on a site there to find out what your air quality district's contact information is and what you need to know. You must either meet the income requirements or live in a disadvantaged community defined by your air quality district. Just as an example, a family of three must make below $85,000 annually. Vehicle emissions are based on the air quality districts in which you live. If you qualify for the program, you can receive that mobility voucher up to $7,500. This rate is flat for all income levels, household size, and is dependent on the air quality district. And, of course, you can apply in California, of course. This would be currently three districts enrolled in the Clean Cars for All program: San Francisco Bay Area, South Coast, San Joaquin Valley. And one is in process in Sacramento. And the funding comes from the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Funds. That's who funds the program. The amounts that are approved in air quality districts will receive 2019-2020 will be decided in October of 2019 right now. And the Greenhouse Reduction Fund received $903,000 in the 2019/2020 budget. So cool stuff. Yay, California. Good for you. You're doing it right. You're definitely paving the path to cleaner environment, not to mention everything else that you're doing for the environment with all your very, very positive trends towards eliminating carbon gas from our environment. So it's a beautiful thing. So do you know that cycling is one of the best activities you can do to banish a bad day? What do you think of that?
No, Brandon? Really?
Yeah, really, really. Indoor-outdoor cycling ranked close to the top for beating stress, depression, and poor mental health days. How about that? Of course, that was from our friend Celine Yeager, who did an article through Rodale and for Bicycling Magazine. And everyone knows that, you know, cyclists, that exercise helps improve our health. As cyclists, we definitely know that bikes make us feel better. I always say, if I'm riding down the road and I got a set of handlebars in front of me and I'm moving forward, I'm just happy. That's all there is to it. Riding a bike inside or out came a close second to playing a team sport or as an activity most beneficial for emotional wellness. The researchers in the study, which was published in Lancet, analyzed the exercise and mental health of a whopping 1,237,194 adults using 3 years of survey data where participants reported the type of exercise they did, how much they exercised, and how many days they experienced poor mental health in the form of stress, depression, or other emotional trouble. Ah, boy, oh boy. What type of riding boosts your mood best? Hard and fast. Nothing blows out bad mental woes like hammering on the pedals. Easy spinning, taking the fresh air and scenery eases my troubled mind. So whatever you do, as long as you're out there doing it, really, really helps. It makes a big, big difference. So cycling helps with your mental health. I have to move on to, I have more to talk about on this. Maybe we'll bring it up more on another show. But we need to move forward here because we're coming into the end of the show, and I would like to talk about the calendar a little bit here. I've got to flash over to a different screen here to get this to come up. But starting out today, the CCAP School Cyclocross is tonight in New Haven. So again, CCAP, Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program, the best youth cycling program in the country, without any argument. They are going to have another one of their school cross races in New Haven tonight. On October 27th, the Connecticut Series of Cross will bring us Brody Cross. Last weekend was the third one, which we had in East Hampton, and that was Belltown Cross, and that is now through, so that was number three. This will be number four in the series, in the Connecticut Series, 4 of 7 is what that'll be. And we'll see that on the 27th, which is coming up this weekend on Sunday. And that will be in New Hartford, Connecticut. Any information that you need on any of these, of course, is available through Bike Reg. On October 30th, CCAP, School Cross, again, in Middlefield, Connecticut. And November 2nd, we will have the next race in the Connecticut Series, which is Cheshire Cross in Cheshire, Connecticut. And we are talking, that's a course that's been going on for a while now. I remember when Hunter first put that race together many years ago, and it's pretty much in the same spot. It has what everybody knows as the hill. There's a hill that goes through the backwoods that is just a grueling, grueling climb in that race. But it's a really cool race, and it's in a park in Cheshire, and it's been going on for years. It's well established. On November 9th through the 10th, the annual Northampton International Cyclocross Race in Northampton, Mass. If you've never seen a UCI race, this is a good one to go to. It's a big race. Adam Meyerson's been putting this on for years. It's a great race to go to, and you get to see a next level of cyclocross racing. And anyway, definitely worth checking out. And it's the 9th through the 10th, so there's a couple of days of racing there. Moving on to November 23rd, we have KMC CrossFest in Thompson, Connecticut. And that is part of the Connecticut Series, and that will be the 6th of the races for the Connecticut Series. And on December 1st will be the very final of the Cyclocross Connecticut Series, Bishop's Orchard Cyclocross, and that is in Guilford, Connecticut. That is also the finals of the Connecticut State Cyclocross Championships, so that's kind of a cool thing too. For more information about bicycle racing, you can go to bikereg.com and click on the calendar page. You can also find many recreational rides there too. You just look down the menu and pull up what you're looking for. My name is Pedalin' Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.